This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:06 in the evening and you are listening to Lynn and Ayman. So earlier, before we move on to our full-on SRC court case hour, we just wanted to look at some of the messages that have come through on the subject of lifelong learning. So Tahir says, for example, I take UX design online courses. Being a university, my workplace supports this.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think nowadays there's a lot of movement towards, you know, encouraging universities to conduct ODL, which is open and distance learning courses, or online and distance learning courses. People can subscribe to it or enroll in it, do it while they're at home or at work and all that, and still gain a qualification that is recognised by the MQA.
There's actually a bit of a theme coming through with people kind of talking a lot about learning personal finance as well as tech or internet-related things. Mm-hmm. So, for example, April says, just attended a short course on data science earlier this month. My boss approved and paid for the expenses, but still struggling meanwhile on the assignments and later implementation in the workplace. Lifelong learning is important, but at times challenging, as we are already drowning in a never-ending workload. Mm-hmm. It requires good time management to balance it all.
Yeah, and that would be a huge struggle, right? Because you already have all these responsibilities and work that you have to do related to your job. At the same time, you are interested to learn new things, and it's very cool and awesome to like, you know, expand on your knowledge. But it's a huge struggle, and I respect people who, you know, do pursue this lifelong learning, because it's a great thing.
I respect it even more, I think, when you don't do it for purely selfish reasons, I suppose. Because for me right now, I have a relatively busy working life, and I know that in terms of my professional development, the kinds of skills, I'm not necessarily taking that. However, learning to cook Italian food, I might be interested in that. This year, I'm thinking of taking up sewing. I'd like to learn how to sew. But I know that if it were more things to do with my work, I don't know if I would be as open to making time for that. But because it's something completely different, because it's going to work a completely different part of my brain, I think I find that more appealing, the idea of it.
I once tried to learn C++. I bought that big C++ for Dummies book, tried to do it like on my own. Eventually, I gave up. I think it relates to April's point, how, you know, after learning, there is a challenge like in your own time trying to implement it in your work and real life. It is very difficult. And I think if a company does send their employee to a course or whatever, it is important that after that course, there is an opportunity to continue practicing it so that, you know, you can be better at it.
Jessica says, learning investment, cryptocurrencies and blockchain. So like I said, there is a theme here, I think, emerging of keeping on top of investments and personal finance, and then conversely trying to keep up with, I suppose, the cool stuff, the cool technological stuff that's happening, and also the stuff that's going to affect our work.
Yeah, because these are the kind of areas that people continue to say that it's going to be very important, IR 4.0 and whatnot, and also personal finance. A lot of people still have that low level of financial literacy, so doing that course will, you know, will be very beneficial for you. And I guess that's why, you know, a lot of people seem to be going through these courses.
So tell us, what are you engaged in learning right now? You know, we've been talking about this concept of lifelong learning, but I just love to know, like, what classes have you started taking as an adult? What are you learning? What are you passionate about? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, it is 6:10 and we are going to be moving on to our set of stories, right, this hour, because they come as a pair. So we're going to be talking about a development in the SRC trial involving former Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib Razak, where he's asked for a handwriting expert to look at several documents that have been submitted as evidence. So we're going to be looking at it from two separate angles. First, understanding the role of handwriting experts, and then after that, looking at the statement made by ad hoc prosecutor Datuk V. Sitambaram that this this whole pull of a handwriting expert just amounts to a tactical manoeuvre.
Okay, so first of all, the handwriting side of things. So what happens is that last month, Najib's lead counsel Tan Sri Muhammad Shafi Abdullah informed the court that the defence will call a handwriting expert from Australia to study the authenticity of several documents that are related to SRC International International, and these documents have Najib's signatures on them. So Najib's lawyer, Harvinderjit Singh, also argued that the authenticity of the documents had not been conclusively determined, which is why they want to call an expert to examine the documents and testify in court.
Okay, so said expert is one Dr. Stephen Strack from Australia. So Najib's legal team has said it's important for him to examine the documents because he had previously only examined scanned copies, which were given to him last month. In a preliminary report, he said his analysis of these documents were limited because he couldn't determine if they had been manipulated. So I guess what we want to look at is how handwriting experts do what they do and what role they play in court cases like this.
Yeah, so when doing research for this story, right, I was wondering, like, why is it limited that, you know, if you look at scanned copies, your judgment of it is limited. So I read about it and, you know, handwriting experts are pretty cool. They can determine all kinds of things about, for example, the pressure that you put through your pen, the strokes that you make. They can also tell, like, how long ago that document was signed or written on. Obviously, I don't know how, but it's just interesting that from something as simple as, you know, a pen on ink on paper, you can tell so many things about the person writing it.
For sure. And I guess that speaks through to people's concerns surrounding things like forgery as well,
yes,
right? Because if your writing is supposed to be so identifiable, then what goes into impersonating somebody only through their lettering, only through what they write? So I think for me, my interest in this is very much to do with, we all know that the trials are going to be a long haul. We all know this. We all know that there are going to be twists and turns and different things being brought up. But I think it's important. I don't know about everyone else. At least for me, I would like to know and fully understand, I suppose, what the ramifications are when things like this happen, right? There are going to be moves brought out. We are going to talk about that idea of this is just a tactical maneuver in just a bit. But I also think just understanding, like you said, the exact expertise, helping us do that is Lim Chin Chin, Senior Consultant Forensic Scientist at Forensic Experts Group in Singapore. Chin Chin, thank you so much for joining us. So let's start with that very question. What do handwriting experts do exactly?
Actually, it's very interesting the name that is given. Most people know us as handwriting experts. But actually, unlike the name, we do not just examine handwriting. The generic term is actually what we call forensic document examination. So handwriting is just one part of what we do, because handwriting is just one part in the document. In fact, certain documents don't even have handwriting on it. Okay, so the closest would be, we would say, signatures. So in a document, generally, you find printed text, so it can be printed by inkjet printer, laser printer. So we look at toner, we look at the ink, and things like the company stamp can be on a formal document. Of course, earlier on I mentioned signatures. So we examine signatures and handwriting as well, or even things like the watermark. That means on paper, we examine paper as well, because paper analysis may become something important when it comes to dating of a document.
So, in general, how do you work with the court when it comes to court cases?
Usually what happens is that the client will, usually a lawyer, a law firm will call up with a request. Okay, and depending on the request, then we will ask for different types of documents to be submitted. Okay, for example, let's say we talk about a simple case, a signature case. So the lawyer may say that, they have a document with one disputed signature on this particular, let's say it's a will. Okay, so we will ask questions like, when is this will dated? What's the date written there? And we will want what we call undisputed or specimen signatures of this particular writer, written around the same time, contemporaneous specimens to be submitted, so that we can compare these specimens. That means we'll examine the specimens for characteristics and the variation of these characteristics, and then we'll also look at the disputed signature and then determine whether the features in the disputed signature, do they fall within or do they fall beyond the range of variation that we observe in the specimen signatures. So that will be for, we will say, a typical signature case where the lawyer suspects that, well, the signature may have been forged by somebody else. But if you talk about a case where somebody says that, oh, you know, I think this whole stack of documents that were given to me, they can be invoices or any formal document, I think everything was fabricated. Or I think that everything was backdated. So then what we request would be for those documents, the origins of those documents be submitted to us. And what we'll be looking out for will be different from what we are seeing for the signatures. So usually for such cases, we'll be looking at the printed material. We'll be looking for evidence of backdating. We'll be looking for inconsistencies and irregularities within the document itself. So there were cases where maybe, let's say, we talk about a document and it's a multi-page document. And after examining, what we found was that we actually found evidence that particular pages, important pages with important contents, the entire page was actually substituted. So you still have, let's say we talk about a six-page document, and let's say page six contains the signature. So page six is still intact with the signature. So when you look at, when we examine the signature for the authorship, we found that, oh, the signature is really signed by Mr. X. But page, maybe page two and page three of this document have actually been substituted.
So let's talk about signatures. How do you examine the authenticity of a signature?
Okay, so then we have to talk about the basis of the comparison itself. Okay, where signature is concerned, to determine whether a signature is forged or not forged, the important thing is the comparison process. And in order to compare, we always will require undisputed specimen signatures of the writer. Okay, so we talk about the principles of handwriting examination or signature examination. Generally, we talk about three of them. First of all, no two persons will write alike. Okay, because there's uniqueness in each of our handwriting or signatures. And the very interesting thing is that because from young, when we first started writing, we actually usually follow copybooks. But with time, as the years go by, we develop habits of our own. And because of that, we develop a set of what we call repeated characteristics. That means each time when I form certain characters, let's say I form the letter A, I usually will just write it in that manner. There may be a few forms, but it's usually just that few. I write it in that manner. So what we call repeated characteristics. So we are looking out for these repeated characteristics that are characteristic of this person. But at the same time, there's another interesting phenomenon that happens because although I have repeated characteristics, everybody has repeated characteristics, they also have what we call natural variation. That means although I write my A in this way, it's repeatedly written in this way, there is a variation in the way I write it. That means no two A's that I write will be exactly the same. They can't be because I'm not a robot. It's not like a robot or a computer where I print a printed letter A. So each time I write it in a particular manner, but there's what we call natural variation in the manner that I write it. So these are the what we call important principles that we use when we are examining somebody's specimen writing. So when we have a set of specimen signatures in this case, we'll be looking out at what are the features in this person's writing. Things like the slope of the writing, the slant of the writing, the formation of how he writes certain letters, certain numerals, the sequence of the strokes in the writing, the pen pressure at different points in the writing, and how fluent. Some people have better writing skills, so it can be quite fluent. Some have poorer writing skills, so it's not as fluent. So we look at things like the fluency, the line quality of the writing itself. So after studying all this in the specimen handwriting that is given, then we will compare it with the features that we actually observed in the disputed signature or handwriting. We compare them. Then we see whether the features within this disputed writing or signature, do they fall within or beyond this range of variation that we are seeing in somebody's specimens.
Do you find that people's handwritings change over time? Because I'm wondering, like, how you take that into account when you analyze these documents.
Someone's handwriting handwriting definitely can change over time, and usually it's with age that our handwriting change. But the way that it changes and how fast or slow it changes is really person dependent. So some generally will say that it changes gradually over time. Okay, but the rate at which it changes, how fast or slow it changes, it depends on different persons. And that is something very important you bring up, because this is a very important requirement whenever we do comparison. So earlier on, I mentioned that in order to do the comparison, we would need the person's specimen or undisputed signatures. And we always request that these signatures must be contemporaneous with the disputed signature. So for example, let's say this disputed signature was written on a document that was dated, let's say, 2007. The specimens that we want, let's say we take about 10 of them, they should be dated around, let's say, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, around that time. If we are given a specimen that is, let's say, 2017, that is 10 years later, we usually will not compare it with specimens that are dated in 2017. Without any specimens that are contemporaneous with those of the disputed signatures, because of what you mentioned earlier, that a person's handwriting will change over time.
Right. And on that note, what are some other things that might affect a person's handwriting?
Okay. So such changes occur actually quite naturally, because as a person age, there's deterioration in the writing, because each time when we write, we're talking about muscular control. So it's not with time, again, the person dependent. So this is affected. So usually with time, there's a deterioration in a person's writing. And if you examine your signature, let's say, that you write now, and let's say you think back or you check back your signatures you wrote 10 years ago, sometimes you will see differences. Usually you will omit certain parts as you go older. Okay, but besides aging, there are, which is more gradual actually, there are also some other factors that may affect a person's writing. For example, let's say illness. A person suddenly has an illness that affects him, or let's say a person met with an accident and there was an injury to the hand, so it affects the writing as well. Or if we don't talk about the physical person, then it's more of the environment. Let's say we talk about the writing surface itself. Depending on the surface, some very smooth surfaces or very rough, uneven surfaces, it will affect the writing. Or if you're writing on a vertical surface, okay, imagine, remember when you were a student, you wrote on a whiteboard, you use a whiteboard marker. Okay, a whiteboard marker is what we call a writing instrument. Okay, a whiteboard marker and writing it vertically on a whiteboard. And if you were to use now a ballpoint pen and you write the same thing that you wrote on the whiteboard on a piece of paper, now using a ballpoint pen, on the first look, you would feel that the two handwritings appear different. Okay? But that's where we will look further to look at the formation of the letters. And then we will realize that, yeah, those are the same. But one look, they may appear different because of the writing position, because now it's vertical, and also it's writing on a very smooth surface and using a different instrument, a whiteboard marker in this case, versus writing on a piece of paper on a horizontal surface using a ballpoint pen.
So how easy or difficult is it for someone to imitate another person's handwriting or signature?
Okay, a signature is basically a person's, I would say, a most personalized piece of writing. It's not easy, generally, to imitate someone's signature or handwriting. Well, okay, reason being that earlier on I mentioned, remember the principles, one of the principles is that there are repeated characteristics within each person. That means because of the years I'm writing, there are habits that I gain, and a habit is hard to kick. I would repeatedly do that thing again and again and write it in that manner. That's my repeated characteristics, and you will have your own set of repeated characteristics. For someone to imitate another person's handwriting, it would mean that, first of all, I have to know the other person's repeated characteristics, what are they? And at the same time, I have to get rid of my own characteristics in order to write like the other person. And each time when we write, we are just writing. We are actually not knowing, we don't really look at the letter A than writing or letter B than writing. It's a bit, you know, subconscious kind of thing that you just write. You know that you're writing. Let's say I say write the word apple, you just write apple. But you won't really say write A, okay, I'm writing A, I'm writing C. You don't really know that you're doing that. So it's a bit of a subconscious thing that you are doing. And if I want to imitate someone's writing, it will become a very conscious thing that I'm doing. So first of all, I have to tell myself, okay, I have to write it that way. And then at the same time, I have to tell myself, I cannot write it the way that I want. So it's not easy. Unless we have a very skilled forger that is able to do two things at one time. Get rid of your own habits and know the other person's habits. And knowing the other person's habits is not an easy thing. Especially if we are talking about a complicated signature.
Chin Chin, thank you again for speaking with us. That was Lim Chin Chin, Senior Consultant Forensic Scientist at Forensic Experts Group in Singapore, talking to us about the role of handwriting experts in court cases. We are asking because, of course, there is right now a high-profile court case in our country in which that very thing has been requested. If you have thoughts, you can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.